You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. Hour two on this Monday on Cleveland Browns Daily. Jim Donovan in for Nathan Zagura. And Matt Wilhelm joining me. As always, a great time with Matt. We had Larry Michael, the voice of the Washington Redskins, on in our first hour to talk about, obviously, Robert Griffin III. And he would have done a lot with RG3. And he told us about
spent
what
a lot of time.
What a great guy. He spent a lot of time with him. And, yeah, there are some things football-wise that he's going to work on. Interesting story that he's out working with Tom House now,
yes.
RG3 is. And do you know the trivia question about Tom House?
I do not.
Okay. I think Jason does because I think I used it on one of the broadcasts last year when one of the quarterbacks we mentioned was working with Tom House, former major league pitcher, and he was with the Atlanta Braves. He is most famous for maybe not his pitching. Which is, you know, you wonder.
Recall this story.
He caught Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run the night that he went past Babe Ruth
in the bleachers.
No, he was in the bullpen for the Braves at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Wow,
he caught it. Aaron hit it off Al Downing. And Tom House caught it and was jumping up. Now, I don't know for the fact that he had, you know, the historical aspect of it, but more because he caught it and he came racing out of the out of the bullpen with the ball. I don't know what he got out of it anyway. It's interesting. I mean, here's a baseball pitcher now, and all of these quarterbacks are going to work with him.
And I believe that this is a Browns recommendation for him as well.
Okay. So maybe Hugh Jackson said to them, hey, why don't you go work with Tom House? Anyway, we're going to work with Scott Petrak right now from the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Jimmy. How are you?
Did you know the answer to the question I just posed?
I did not. That's a good story, though.
Well, thank you. Scott, I've been asking the question today to our callers, and boy, have they been calling in.
They have.
On Cleveland Browns Daily, Scott. And I threw out this. Does the signing of Robert Griffin III, RG3, does that change the Browns' strategy at number two to not necessarily have them cemented in to pick the quarterback, the presumably franchise quarterback, future quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, that instead it might open the board up to them to, yes, get a quarterback, but maybe later? What do you think?
Yeah, I really think it does, Jimmy. I'm not saying it should.
You do. You think it does.
I do.
I was just throwing it out there to get some telephone calls, but now, I mean, you're someone I respect. You think it does.
I do. I do. I think if you were guaranteed to take a quarterback at number two, I'm not sure all the benefits of bringing in RG3. You know, I think it could create problems between deciding who to play, and if a guy struggles, do you go to the other guy? I mean, you know all the drama the quarterback situations create in this town.
Yes.
And I think it allows you, if another team says, hey, we want that number two pick, I think that the Browns could then say, okay, we'll trade down, amass more picks, and then go draft a quarterback later. It could be Paxton Lynch at 12 or 15 or Connor Cook at 32. I really think it's more in play now that they have RG3.
And, Scott, I presume that some of that comes after Wentz's pro day this past Thursday, Jared Goff's the week prior, and yes, they're throwing on air, but I would imagine, you know, as a professional, you've watched some of these guys. Is that kind of coming from a place that they may not believe that these are transcendent franchise quarterbacks the way it was the year before with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota?
Well, you know what? I definitely think that they could believe that, and I don't know what Sashi and Andrew Bear and Hugh think about these two individuals. Personally, I like both these guys, and I think both of them are worthy of a top five pick, which is why I wouldn't want to see the Browns pass up on them. I think they should take a quarterback at number two. I don't think RG3 should change their thinking. But, you know, if you're going big picture and thinking, okay, you know, what sets our franchise up better, we could hope to kind of resurrect RG3's career and go add other pieces if we trade that second pick in the draft. I don't think that's a crazy scenario to explore. I just kind of had bought into, let's take a quarterback at number two, groom him, and hopefully be done with finding our quarterback.
All right. Now, but to clarify now, you still would do that, right?
I would.
Go get the quarterback at number two.
Yep.
Because here's the other thing, Scott. You hope that you're not up this high again.
Correct.
To have to go get a quarterback in the need of a quarterback. And if you're not up that high, okay, and you still need the quarterback, the cost of getting up there to get so high. I mean, look at what the Redskins did.
Right.
Gave up to get RG3. I mean, those were four picks, weren't
yes.
they? High picks.
Yes.
I mean, the cost of going up is absolutely amazing. I mean, you remember last year when the rumor broke that the Browns were really, you know, considering Mariota and trying to work a deal and go up there. But the cost is unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. And, you know, that's why I think they might be open to trading that pick. If somebody else, let's say the Eagles, I know that's been floated out there.
Right.
The Eagles really wanted Carson Wentz at number two. Could the Browns turn down four great picks? Maybe not. But I agree with you, Jimmy. We've seen them try to take a quarterback late in the first round. We've seen them try the third round. We've seen them bring in free agents. None of them have worked. And that doesn't mean it won't be different with RG3, but none of them have worked in the past. I'd like to see them take a guy in the top five, take their number one choice at quarterback, and the whole organization get behind that guy.
Yeah.
To me, that's the best way to go. I think if you look across the league, that's where teams have had the most success.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask Matt and Scott this question. So the name we have not mentioned in the 2 hours and 10 minutes, in the hour and 10 minutes that we have been on so far, is Josh McCown.
Yeah.
So was there an evaluation done on McCown that they said, listen, let's go get RG3 if we can, okay? With McCown, you know, because I think Josh was kind of thinking that he would be the bridge guy to the young quarterback, not only in playing, but also in schooling, mentoring that young quarterback, because I think Josh would do a great job at
sure.
that and wants to. So was there, do both of you think that there was some kind of an evaluation reached on McCown that we're going to go a different way? I'll begin with Matt.
You know, my personal perspective is Josh has been in the building within the last 30 days and has met with, you know, had a conversation with Al Saunders right outside of the Dog Bowl, has met with Sashi Brown and potentially Hugh Jackson to understand where his head's at so that maybe Hugh can make a judgment call on what direction maybe they wanted to take on RG3. My personal perspective is I want competitors. And I know you want good people, and Josh is as good as they come. You want mentors.
The best.
But I want competitors. So, and I mentioned RG3 and the word compete. The one big difference for me, if you can unload Josh McCown's contract, that's potentially around $6 million.
Yeah, right.
Okay, you're getting
makes the roster.
Correct.
With the, you add it up, it's close to six.
Correct. Right. I mean, you're getting RG3 at 26 years old with hopefully a budding future at 26 for a 6.75 guaranteed.
Right.
And you're getting rid of 36 and $6 million. I'd rather take the competitor in RG3 to hopefully play like he did in 12 and 13 and stay healthy, as Larry Michael said, than the mentoring aspect of Josh McCown.
All right, where are you, Scott? Was there a determination made on McCown that they're kind of moving past him?
Yeah, I do think that they're going to be done with Josh and they're going to try to trade him if they can. If not, probably release him. But I think there's two layers to it. One is, they don't want to rush. Let's assume they draft a rookie. They don't want to rush him into the lineup.
Right.
And Josh got hurt a bunch last year, so maybe they were worried that Josh would get hurt again and you'd have no choice but to go to the rookie prematurely, and they didn't want to do that. And the second part of that is I do think that Hugh Jackson feels that there's a chance RG3 turns in to the player everybody thought he was as a rookie. And that's so enticing compared to Josh, who would just be a placeholder, that the risk isn't that big, so why not chase that gold when, you know, we all know what Josh is going to give. He's going to be a great mentor, be stable, but he might not be healthy enough to play, and there's no way he's ever going to have the potential that RG3 has.
And Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of that, it's not so much RG3 the player and who he is. It's Hugh Jackson and his confidence in himself on what he can do with quarterbacks to get the best out of RG3, which projects RG3 to return to form more so than anything.
Yeah, well, that definitely. I'm sure that plays a part in it, Matt. There's no doubt about that. But I just keep going back to what we believed about RG3 entering the draft and that first year. I mean, he looked like a guy that would be a top five quarterback in the league. And at 26... it's hard to, I think, if you're trying to find that quarterback and you don't know if the guy's in the draft and you don't know if he's in your building or you know he's not in your building, then how do you pass up on that talent? So I could see how attractive that would be to a guy like you, who believes he can turn an average quarterback into a good player, he must look at all this talent and go, oh, my gosh, I can turn him into, you know, a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the interesting thing to watch, because there's no question that the head coach drove the bus on this one.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I want to go, once they start making picks of guys that are going to help them immediately, presuming that a young quarterback would get time to learn the game and learn the NFL game from the sideline. Scott, once they get to a position, let's say 32, let's say they use the number two pick on a quarterback, then where do they go? Because they could go anywhere, in my mind, because they have so many needs.
Yeah, no, you're no doubt about that, Jimmy. I think you need to address impact positions. And for me, that's pass rusher, receiver, and secondary. I don't think I'd invest a whole lot more in the offensive line early in the draft. They've done that a lot so far, and I just don't know if you can put more resources in there, even though I know they lost Mack and Schwartz. For me, it's, like I said, secondary, receiver, and pass rusher.
And, Scott, I'm actually going to take a step back. For whatever reason, and this is simply because on Cleveland Browns Daily, we get calls taking, you know, going in every direction at number two, from Joey Bosa to Elliott to Ramsey, and, of course, mock drafts 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, they all constantly change. If for whatever reason Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry determine that Goff and Wentz are not transcendent franchise quarterbacks and they go a different direction, take for granted Laremy Tunsil goes number one overall, what do you see the Browns doing at number two, and is it trading back?
Yeah, trading back to me would be priority number one, option number one. I don't think there's another player that you have to take it to. Yeah, I'm not sure the difference between Ramsey at two and whatever player at eight is that big a difference. I don't. So I would try to trade back. If they stay at two, I think it's Ramsey, just because I personally am not sold on Joey Bosa. You know, I think there's some off-the-field issues. I think the conversion to a 3-4, I mean, Matt, you would know better than me, but I'm just not sure that.
We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, Matt's all over that.
Yeah. I'm just not sure that's the best spot for him, so I like Ramsey, especially with the issues that Joe Hayden has, and we all know about Justin Gilbert.
And in some cases, it would probably be reassuring to go Ramsey, because as every draft analyst has said consensusly, he's the can't-miss number one overall guy on their board, and so it would be, I guess, reassuring that the Browns have him as their number one overall guy on their board, and if they don't go quarterback, they go with best player available, which in some cases you can't always say has been done here in Cleveland in the last few regimes.
No, you're definitely right about that.
I want to take you to a different route here before we let you go. And I was really struck this weekend by the Trent Richardson story that came out. And that was that he had so many people, family members, hitting him for money. And then he came out with this declaration that it's easy to get lazy in the NFL. And I remember how and you know, there's an RG3 effect to the whole Trent Richardson thing becoming a Brown, because the Browns missed on the trade. Remember, Scott, get RG3, to get that pick from St. Louis. They were late with their trade package. Mike Holmgren was late making the call to the Rams with the best package that they had available. So Washington got in front of them. They got RG3. The Browns were scorned about that, about being, you know, kind of slow and passive in making that deal. And then suddenly Mike Holmgren went all in and traded up to get Trent Richardson. And Richardson now has all of these clauses in contracts that, you know, he's not even guaranteed $5.
Three teams and out of work right now.
I mean, he's not even guaranteed $5 if he doesn't, like, lose some weight and make the team. But what a sad story, because I remember the day he got traded, Scott, and I remember all of the people that were around him. And someone told me it was up to, like, 15 people that he was taking care of, you know, with that rookie contract. Isn't that a sad story? We were so excited about this. Matt touched on Ezekiel Elliott being a can't-miss guy coming out of Ohio State, and I agree with him. But I thought when Richardson came out of Alabama, he was a can't-miss guy.
Yes,
right. Well, I mean, Bill Polian, you know, won Super Bowls.
Right.
Said Trent was a can't-miss, right? You had to take him.
You had to take him.
No problem with him.
Right.
In the top five. And to me, it's just another reason why you don't take a running back that high in the draft. I don't care. I like Ezekiel Elliott too, but I could not take him in the
top
five.
Not that much.
Start talking about it after 10. Even that might be too high. But it is a sad story, Jim. And I like Trent.
Yeah, I did too.
He's a friendly guy, but you're right. He had that place in Columbia Station, and all kinds of people were living in it, and there were fights.
Yeah, it was a crazy situation. That's right.
You know, I don't think he's going to be able to turn it around in Baltimore. Maybe he'll be motivated, but you know, Joe Banner's talked about his lack of vision, which I think is legit, and I just don't think he had the explosion. To me, the week before they traded him, there was a play in Baltimore, and I said, you know what, he just doesn't hit the hole fast enough. And we haven't seen that from him again. He hasn't hit the hole or seen the hole.
I don't think we ever saw the running back that we saw in Alabama.
I agree.
Here in Cleveland.
No. And I don't know if that was injuries or, you know, is it as simple as he got lazy?
Yeah.
You'd hate to see that from a rookie, but he just wasn't a difference maker at all.
Yeah. But, what you know, you hear these stories about, you know, Bernie Kosar used to, will always tell the story about, you know, how everybody would hit him when he came into the NFL.
Yeah.
Family members, friends, college teammates, you know, guys in Boardman that he knew growing up, and how it's just amazing, and how he would always like to sit down with somebody. I mean, I think he used it, Scott, when Charlie Fry came to the Browns and said, hey, listen, Kosar would tell him, you know, you're going to have people come out of the woodwork because, you know, they think you've got a ton of money and they're going to hit you, and you have to be strong. You have to also learn to say no. And Richardson obviously couldn't do that. It really sapped him of cash and, I guess, incentive.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that should be told at the rookie symposium.
Yes,
you know,
that's right.
They try to get those guys to learn those lessons, but that's a great one because Trent, I mean, we talk about all the money these guys make, and Trent could not have made that much money. And if he was giving it away, he probably doesn't a whole lot to last him the rest of his life.
Yeah, I know. An amazing story. All right, Scott, thank you very much.
Thanks guys.
Always good to talk to him. I was reading that story.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're following his career.
Of course.
And even when he left here, and I remember being out at the airport the night he got traded, and the Colts sent the plane in that had the Colts horseshoe
on the tail.
Yeah. And they were waiting for him, and the Colts felt that was the last missing piece. You know,
Edgerrin James.
I was just going to say, it was Edgerrin James. And he was going to show up, and he was going to help them out. That was the last little push that they needed. And he didn't have it for them at all. I mean, he was 3 yards a carry.
Yep. And you know what, Jim? And I didn't, again, being drafted in the fourth round, and yes, I signed a second contract, I never had those open hands and writing checks the way first-round picks
did.
I didn't. But what I did have was some of those individuals – you know, that sometimes are close with you, that always seem to hit the bathroom when the check shows up at the end, and it kind of just sits there awkwardly, you know, and it's always that guy that reaches out and grabs it and takes
well,
care of it.
I guess this is mine.
Exactly.
I guess this is mine.
I was that one.
I was so excited when they got Trent Richardson.
I know.
I was too.
So
I mean, I'm looking out at Kevin Mack. He just walked by our studio here. I mean, and there's a guy that, you know, Mack and Biner together were, I mean, over 1,000
yards
in a same season. And Richardson just, with 950, I think, in his rookie year.
Yep.
And then nothing after
Correct.
That. I mean, it was just nothing after that. Take a break?
Yes.
We're going to take a timeout. Thanks to Scott Petrak. Good stuff.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
And again, there's that interesting strategy. A lot of people, now you're hearing more. You're hearing a little bit more now of maybe they should go, you know, and fill another need and then get the quarterback later. If you have a thought on that, give us a jingle at 216-578-0850 as we continue on the Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We are back. We're going to go to the telephones here in a second, but a quick thought from you, Matt Wilhelm, because you have brought up speed 40 times, okay? So when the kid Treadwell clocked a 4.6, you said today?
4.63 handheld.
Okay, well, first of all, handheld. It's just guys holding
it's human
it on
air.
All right.
So there's human air. So they're a little bit faster.
All right. Does that bother you, 4.6?
Yes.
I mean, are you going to see that on the field?
Do you at 32, don't hate the 4.63,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, yeah.
At
I mean,
15, 16, where, you know, in that 11 to 20 window where right. people think Treadwell could honestly go, I don't like 4-6-3. Yeah.
See, I mean, because when I would watch Benjamin fly, it was great. I mean, we were
talking 4-3.
He was like 2-4.
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
To the eye.
Correct.
And, yeah. I mean, but I don't know. But I mean, still.
But you got to imagine. I mean, look at a reinstated Josh Gordon is a 4-4 guy at the same size,
right,
too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Treadwell, 6'2", 221, 33-inch vertical, 4-6-3.
Right.
That, to me, screams possession receiver.
Okay. Mike is on a cell, and he's going to weigh in on our hot topic of the
all
day.
Right.
And we've really had a hot one today. In the wake of what happened last week with Robert Griffin III coming here and the draft now 4 weeks away, Mike, weigh in here on Cleveland Browns Daily. How you doing on this Monday?
I'm doing well, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I'm going to skip the RG3 quarterback preamble and just go straight into the
get it.
Thought that, you know, you can make the argument that the biggest glaring need for this team is actually a pass rusher. I mean, I don't understand how people think in this day and age, watching the NFL, how you think you can ever be successful without getting to the quarterback. They have no pass rushers on this football team. They have nobody who can consistently get to the quarterback, and they haven't had anybody for a long time.
All right, can I just halt you for a second and stay on the line? I want to ask you a question.
Absolutely.
There's a new theory in the NFL, and sometimes people say, hey, if you have Batman, Batman has to have Robin. Okay,
right.
So Kruger didn't have a guy on the other side last year, but the year before that, he had Sheard over on the other side before he left to go to New England, and he had a big, big year that
right.
year. Don't you need bingo bango? You need one guy on one side. Like Von Miller had the other guy on the other
DeMarcus
side.
Ware.
He had DeMarcus Ware on the other side. So
right.
I mean, is that the new formation now that you need? You know, you have one guy on one side. But he needs the guy on the other side to be effective. Both of them need each other.
Well, I think you need everybody doing their job and staying in their lanes in order for a player to be able to use his talent. You know, heads up to be able to get to the quarterback. Of course. You know, you're only as strong as your weakest link in the chain, but, I mean, they don't have a transcending player who can get to the quarterback like most teams do. Paul Kruger's a good pass rusher, but he's not Von Miller. He's not Khalil Mack. He's not one of those
guys. We all know that.
Yeah.
But
really, Kruger, now let me go back on Kruger. Wasn't Kruger helped out a great deal when he was in because he had Suggs on the other side of him in Baltimore? And Paul was really kind of a situational guy in Baltimore.
Wasn't he
a third down guy?
He absolutely was. Mike, first and foremost, thank you very much for the call. And you bring up a great point, and it's a point that I continually make, Jim. And knowing that the Cleveland Browns have played a 3-4 defense, I've always said what you said, the Batman to your Robin. And you brought up Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware. I played in a scenario in San Diego as an inside linebacker with Sean Merriman and Sean Phillips. And you're talking 16 and a half sacks on one side, 13 on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And what it becomes for you as you truly evolve as a defense is you never know. And why I love the 3-4 defense is you never know where the pressure's coming from. Are you bringing one or the other?
There you go.
Are you bringing both?
Right.
Then you open up the middle and you drop the two outside guys and you grow. And that's why I always say how cerebral your outside linebackers need to play, because if they're always coming, which Paul Kruger did in 2014, and yes, did have 11 and a half sacks, but he never dropped, and then O'Neal went the polar opposite and dropped him too much and never brought him enough.
When I watched those two guys in Denver, specifically in the playoffs.
Does it just get you excited?
It was unbelievable watching
how disruptive.
They were totally different. And then the middle guys started to feed off
mind
of that.
Mind you, Jim, When Sean Phillips and Sean Merriman had their best year, guess who the defensive coordinator was? Wade Phillips.
There you go. Wade Phillips.
Same one as DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Tony in a truck on Cleveland Browns Daily. Hi, Tony.
How you doing there, guys?
Good. How are you? Thanks for calling.
Hey, I'm actually a Bengals fan up here doing business, so I thought I'd call you.
Oh, well,
tell us about Hugh.
Yeah, tell us about Hugh Jackson.
I think you got a tremendous coach, and I think you got somebody that sees something in RG3 that a lot of people haven't seen. And I think I don't think you're going to draft a quarterback unless he's really in love with somebody. But your last caller with the pass rush, I think he's either going to draft a pass rusher or a left tackle. That's just my inkling. And we actually do a little bit of work with the Bengals. So I've been in the locker room down there. I've had a chance to talk to your coach. And I just think he'll do wonders for you guys.
Now, let me throw this at you. Late in the year, last year, and what looked like, I'm telling you, Cincinnati to me had it all. When they were here, but when they were here this year,
yes.
Not the, never
here,
mind the game up there.
Game,
yeah, but when
was...
they were here in Cleveland, I have to tell you, they toyed with the Browns that day because they were so good. It was almost like a scrimmage.
Yep.
I mean, they said, hey, listen, we're going to put offensive linemen out wide, see how teams handle this. I mean, it was really off the creative charts. Then the Pittsburgh game, and Dalton goes down hurt in that game. And I got to tell you, Hugh did a heck of a job in getting A.J. McCarron ready to play. What did you think, Tony?
I think he did I'll say heck of a job, too, instead of something else. But I went to that game. I came up for that game.
Right.
And I'll tell you this. I want to see a strong rivalry. I hate games like that. You know, if we're not winning, I actually root for you guys. So,
well, thank you for that.
You know,
that's good.
And I remember what we went through back in the day.
Sure.
So, you know, I think if you stick with you and stick with his plan, I think you'll be right there fairly quick. I think, you know, truly, I think he's going to pull miracles with RG3. And if he doesn't, he only signed a 2-year contract and he's gone.
There you go.
Thanks,
Tony.
The other thing is.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and see, that just goes back to my point.
That was a false start on me.
And then I tried to follow up really quickly as well. Yeah. But that goes back to my point as we had Scott Petrick on. I really feel Hugh's resume as it sets right now and his belief in what he can do with a rookie or a guy like RG3 and build around him and only have to have him process the information that he needs to process.
Right.
Don't give him too much. Don't give him everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's the evolution of Andy Dalton with Hugh Jackson is he gave him everything this past year when they had off the 8-0 start because, A, you had the weapons around him. You had the protection in front of him. You've got the weapons behind him in Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard.
Perfect.
That allowed him to just let it rip.
I mean, talk about having it all.
And I do believe that Hugh is, A, the right man for this job. I think he's going to create leaders. He's going to be motivating for these young men, and he's going to develop highly competitive football players, which is something that we hadn't have had enough of here in the last 5 to 10 years.
Hershey, Pennsylvania. That's where Dan is. Hi, Dan. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. Yeah,
it's an honor to talk to you, Mr. Donovan. And I love the way you call the game.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad you have your health, and I want to congratulate you on the award you got recently.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a great night.
When I look at the deal with RG3, it's obvious to me because it's not a lot of money and it's just a couple of years.
Yep.
We still need to draft another quarterback. I think we should take somebody at 2.
Who do you like it to?
I personally like Goff.
Okay.
However, there's a lot of talk now if someone might trade up to 1, maybe the Rams or somebody. So at that point, the thing is, there's talk about drafting down. I don't really who's so good that somebody would want to come up to us at 2.
Well, I think it's those. I think it's Dan. I think it's the quarterbacks. Maybe
Niners, Eagles are the 2.
Yeah.
People are linking to Jared Goff.
Yeah,
and more so than anything, his ability to I think it might be Eagles. Is it Eagles Wentz?
It's
Niners
Eagles,
Goff.
I mean, that's the story last week was Philadelphia is in love with Wentz and wanted to go up to either A, get in front of the Browns, or B, trade with the Browns.
But what doesn't make sense to me is the Eagles gave their quarterbacks a combined $40 million roughly guaranteed in Sam Bradford
that's
and Chase Daniel via free agency.
That's right, yeah.
To go draft a quarterback?
Yeah, yeah.
To me, is that's a problem in itself.
Yeah.
Again, a problem we don't want to have.
Right.
But,
no.
Hey.
All right, we'll continue on. Keep your telephone calls coming at 216-578-0850 as we wind our way towards April 28th. And out of Chicago, will you be in Chicago then?
We're not going to be in Chicago.
Okay.
I'll be here in Berea.
Yep.
Nathan will be at the draft party downtown.
Okay. Anyway, that's going to be fun in Chicago when the Browns go on the clock at number 2. And maybe what happens at number 1 will definitely affect what happens at number 2.
Yes, it will.
Anyway, a lot of time to talk about it, but we are on the clock for that. And we will continue here on Cleveland Browns Daily after this timeout. There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook
outside your door. You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We are back on this Monday, and everyone is weighing in. Draft, RG3, quarterback. Fascinating. You know what was fascinating the other day when I was watching the Carson Wentz workout at North Dakota State when Pep Hamilton jumped in and sprayed that ball down,
yes,
and then the duck that went into the turf after that, and everyone went,
oof. And see, that's where, and this is, again, Nathan is a pro golf guy, so it's highly biased in Jared Goff's situation, but Goff didn't know that it was coming.
Right.
Meaning when it was out at Cal, it was out. It was a little breezy. It was
right.
outdoors.
Right.
Here comes Pep and Hugh, and you're squirting the ball. Goff throws very well with the wet football with the smaller hands. You would think that Carson Wentz would know it's coming. Pep comes out, squirts the ball.
Right.
First one goes into the
yeah.
ground. And ironically, and this is just how the media kind of controls the narrative,
yeah.
it was Jared Goff's small hands.
Yes.
But he answers the bill by throwing the wet football with the small hands very well. But nobody's talking about Wentz's wet football with the bigger hands into the turf.
Yeah, it was. But it was amazing.
It
to
was
see
amazing
it,
to
you know,
see. Yes.
How he just popped up there and did it. And you're right. You would have thought maybe he would have been expecting that after they did it with Goff.
Yep.
About, you know, the week before. Chris is in Cleveland here on Cleveland Browns Daily, and we say hello to you. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. I wanted to speak about the draft a little bit and,
sure.
and kind of talk about some of the younger players on the roster. Just for, I think the RG3 pickup is a good pickup. I think that Hugh King, at the end of the day, I think RG3 is a very talented player. Probably athletically, and you know, other than Cam Newton, the most athletic quarterback in the league. But as far as the draft, I think that they should be the best player at number two.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to piggyback off the caller of a couple of callers ago when he was talking about a pass rusher.
Pass rush, right.
I wouldn't disagree that they should draft a pass rusher. But one thing I think, you know, as fans and media, we live in a microwave society. We don't allow players a chance to develop. And on the defensive side of the ball, I think the Browns have some talent. I think that just because they're younger players and we kind of like give Ray Farmer a hard time because of Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel, we don't pay attention to some of the young talent on the team.
So you're talking like Nate Orchard.
Yes, Xavier Cooper.
Xavier Cooper. Good, very good.
Yes,
very good.
Very
yeah.
Xavier Cooper got a real good first step. Didn't play a lot last year. But, you know, on the inside, he's a, you know, I could see the talent. He's athletic
uh-huh.
and he has a first step. And Nate Orchard, and even
I thought Orchard came on at the end of the year.
Yeah, when he got a chance to play, he stepped up a little bit, was a great pass rusher in college. And even Bartavius Mingo, I'm going to take up for him a little bit because if you look at Bartavius Mingo's career, he really fell victim to a coaching change. I mean, sometimes in the NFL, and I know your partner can attest to this, coaches have a view of a player, and there's nothing that the player can do to change that. Bartavius Mingo, first year in the league, he had 5 sacks. You know, not great, but he didn't play. You know, he didn't start. Then when Mike Pett took over, he didn't believe Bartavius Mingo was a pass rusher, so he really haven't had the opportunity to develop.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. And
Mingo is such a guy, such a mystery.
He is, and I agree.
You can check a lot of boxes with Mingo.
Yes.
I mean, the physical part. You know, there's a lot.
He's never
been big enough, right? Never been able to
athletic
hold weight.
Athletic as all can be.
Athletic, right. I mean, so much so that some people thought, hey, could he be a safety? Remember?
everybody
was saying, could he be a safety?
See, my take on Barkevious Mingo is, and I think part of what he said is to blame on some coaching changes and obviously who drafted you and what regime it was and what defense you're playing in and what they put their onus in. It's almost like a quarterback. You know, we talked about Alex Smith for how many years. He's been in the league 4 years with 4 different offensive coordinators and really never lived up to that number one overall billing.
Right.
And we see it now paying off being in that same system. But the one thing that I believe is true of high-level competitive players in the national football, this is actually in professional sports, those that have it, no matter what scheme or the number of opportunities that they're given, they make plays. And that's the one thing that I think Barkevious Mingo has been missing. It's when you're drafted 6th overall,
yeah.
even in a bad draft, like where's the flash? Make 3 flash plays a year that make me go, I get it. I see what they saw.
J.J. Watt.
And we don't get that.
Luke Kuechly.
J.J. Watt does that 3 times a game, you know.
Yeah.
But I met
Luke Kuechly.
Luke Kuechly does it, you know, in almost a series.
Yeah, I mean,
those are that's the one thing that's missing. The great players persevere on bad teams. They make splash plays. And I just, we don't get splash plays out of Barkevious Mingo for whatever reason.
Yeah, good point. Rick is in Westlake. Hi, Rick. You're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got probably a provocative question for you. In the basketball world, it's not uncommon to kind of tank a season to get next year's high-round draft pick. From what I've been reading, the Browns, with their number two pick, could get anywhere from 6 to 9 future high-round picks, first, second, maybe even third picks, if they just completely traded out this year's pick for future draft choices. If they did that, and everything I read is the best they might do this year is win 4 games. So if they win 2 rather than 4, big deal. And still they would get their own high-round pick for next year, plus all those draft picks. Somebody might say that strategy doesn't make sense because of the revenue stream, but my understanding is most of the revenue stream now isn't seats sold at the stadium, but the TV and radio
television
contract,
money, right,
which
the
are
television
long-term.
Money. Absolutely, TV money. You're right.
Right.
Well, I mean, you're right about that, the revenue stream. Yeah, but 6 to 9 picks.
That to me doesn't make sense. And the other thing that I can say after being in this building now.
Is there a player, never mind a team.
Deshaun Watson might be the only kid from Clemson, the Clemson quarterback.
Is there a player? You mean next year?
Next year.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
But is there a player this year that somebody would like give up their entire draft or,
no.
or a bunch of picks?
No.
Or a Washington St. Louis deal that ended with RG3 going to Washington?
No.
That you would get those kind of picks?
If Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, and the new regime here in Cleveland is questioning if Jared Goff or Carson Wentz are a franchise quarterback,
right.
I can't imagine that a St. Louis Rams regime or a Niners regime or an Eagles regime sees it that differently, that they would give up a Washington-size ransom to move up to 1 or 2 to take that guy. Mm-hmm. The discrepancies can't be that large in my eyes. And as you said, Holmgren and his regime was what? Just a few minutes or you know, away from making the deal that would have locked us into potentially taking RG3 at number 2.
We would have had RG3 at 2012.
Because we saw a value like the Redskins saw value. I don't see anyone else finding a discrepancy that large in these two prospects the way that they did in RG3.
Yeah. And because that they didn't get the trade done that year, and Holmgren took so much criticism for that, they became very antsy on the night of the draft.
Yeah.
And if you remember then, they got Richardson, they went up to get him, and then they took Wheaton, you know, and down in the 20s there, and because they felt they needed a quarterback and didn't get RG3 and didn't get Luck, obviously. And, you know, you can't draft that way either.
No, you can't.
You can't draft that way. We'll be back and wrap up a very fun Monday show here on Cleveland Browns Daily, right after a timeout on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Baby, don't say no so quick. This ain't about me trying to see how.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We are back on what has been a great show today here on Cleveland Browns Daily. And we owe it to all you out there because you've really weighed in and we're talking about, we talked about a lot. I mean, we talked about RG3, but I think people are really into the draft and what the Browns will do now that RG3 is here.
And
so that's going that I mean that I don't know that it changes what their strategy is going to be, but it does it makes it an interesting thing for us to watch.
And you know what's something that I pondered, and I haven't really truly answered the question myself, but I'll just throw it out there. Maybe it's a topic for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Would we trade 2 and 32 for 12 and 22 like we picked last year? Because if Goff or Wentz is not that franchise guy, do we have more options at maybe taking a second tier quarterback like some people think we might take at 32?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get him at 20, and you can go get a playmaker at 12 or that pass rusher at 12 that everybody's asking for. Can you meet a larger need at 12 and 22?
Yeah, here's the deal, okay? Andy Dalton, second round.
Yeah.
Derek Carr,
second round. Teddy Bridgewater, 32nd pick, which we have this year.
Right.
So the last pick of the first round in 2014.
How about that? It can be done. You know, you're right. I mean, you can play a lot of games. You have 10 picks, and you have some very high picks everywhere, really, right? Because of where you were. I mean, you're not sticking down in the low rounds or anything like that. You're up high almost in every round.
You are.
Like that. It's just fascinating to see that Larry Michael really shed a lot of light.
He did.
On RG3. That's going to be interesting. Because there was that story that came out about the Denver Broncos calling up the Shanahans about RG3 and then backing off of that a little bit. But then there's the story about Hugh Jackson and the Browns loving RG3 and also loving that workout that he had.
They said
right?
his workout athletically, best they've seen in a while, and was as good in the meeting room as he was on the football field.
Yeah, these pro workout days are really interesting. Mississippi today, okay, and they're going to continue. And these are fun things to watch, too.
Yes, Paxton Lynch, not till April 6th.
Yeah. His bowl game troubled me.
It troubled me as well.
Playing
from the shotgun as much as he did troubles me.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, an interesting story. I want to talk to you about this kid, Christian Hackenberg, tomorrow because, you know, that everyone's been turned off by him in the interview process because he's blamed James Franklin, you know, for not conducive offense to his talents. Anyway, we'll continue tomorrow. I'll be back with Matt. Matt had a great
time. Absolutely, you too.
And we had a great time with all of you here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Thanks to Jason Gibbs for producing, and we'll talk again tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.